Record. What I have to do, John?
Let's get rolling,
I have
right?
to hit record. John Stamp, welcome to the Protectors Podcast.
I appreciate it, man. I am excited to be here. I'm a big fan of both of your podcasts, actually. It's really cool.
Yeah, we'll be rolling live tonight, man. I might have you just stick around for another hour and we'll be doing live. What are we talking about tonight? We are talking about Big Trouble in Little China.
I remember you guys mentioning that last during the They Live episode.
Oh, They Live. You know, I didn't realize that John Carpenter did Big Trouble in Little China either.
That guy out of everybody sneaks those movies in. They never put it together. Mm-hmm. And then he does something where he really promotes it, like that awful vampires movie. And yeah, just like, what are you thinking? You got, you know, classics and then you just, and nobody knows you make them, but then you're going to really promote that thing. It's
like, I know. Between him and like such random movies, like Nick Cage is like my favorite now. Like I've been like forever. But like lately, he's been hitting out of the park with movies. He had this movie called Pig where he was like a chef. And now he's got this unbearable some crap where it's basically called the Nick Cage movie where he plays himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Kevin Bacon, like I feel like those guys got all their, like Bernie Madoff stole all their money and they just had to take whatever script came down the pipe. That's the only thing I can think of for some of them. But Nick Cage, ever since I saw The Rock, I was like, yeah, Nick Cage. I guess maybe he was in Sean Connery's light for a second, but that dude just got style. Like I even like Con Air after I saw The Rock.
I did too. Yeah. You know, you know what? It's campy fun, man. It's fun.
Oh yeah.
He made this movie. I think it's Willy's Fun House, where it's anybody just Google it. And what he does is he gets stranded and he's put into this, like this fun house, which is basically Chuck E. Cheese dolls come to life at night. And it's like the funniest fest thing ever.
But I have to watch that. Horrors.
You have got to watch it. I think it is called, I'm looking it up right now. Willy's Fun House.
Yep. My kids are obsessed with that Five Nights at Freddy's thing, which is kind of like the same thing.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah.
And I don't get it at all. But now that you've said that, Nicolas Cage at Five Nights at Freddy's, I think I have to. But I didn't like him in Face Off.
I mean, I like Face Off too. Puts the headphones on a kid and it's like blah blah. When we're doing a Nick Cage movie coming up, and like the Nick Cage protagonist show.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's called Willy's Wonderland. That's what it was, 2021. But if you go back, he's in the Croods too. That's another good thing with the kids.
The Croods are a huge movie at my house.
I don't think Jiu-Jitsu really has anything to do with Jiu-Jitsu, but that came out in 2020.
I remember that one.
You know what? 381 titles attributed to Nick Cage. 381.
My wife fell in love with him, like Raising Arizona, like way back.
Yeah, that's classic, man.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic
movie. That
is
absolutely Randall Tex Cobb.
Yeah, man, that's a good, I can't quote movies and names, but my wife and my whole family just do it like it's their job. But I can't do it. But yeah, last one, especially since the new Top Gun movie's coming out, is I tried to get my kids to watch Firebirds. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
What was that? The Cobra movie?
Yes.
I am the greatest flying with one eye.
Oh my gosh.
Nope.
That is that's unbelievable, man. Firebirds. I think Sean Young was in it too. I'm like the same way with these IMDb things, like Internet Movie Database. Sean Young, but then she went kind of cuckoo crazy after that.
Yeah, she had a moment. I think she peaked in that Harrison Ford movie, the sci-fi one. I was just looking at it the other night.
Blade Runner.
The Android. Yeah, Blade Runner. Love that movie.
And then No Way Out was, I think, her last real role with Kevin Costner, where he played KGB. Okay, we're here to talk about you and your books, Blood Red Ivory and your background and all this other good stuff, man. But once you get onto this movie thing, I'm like, I could talk movies all day long. I should really just do movies. Like, John, tell me your favorite movie. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I got it. I actually had to, I was putting my list together. I found the old DVD collection, so I had to put the list together. 9-year-old's getting there. He wants to see R-rated movies. I'm like, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But it's, I had to rank them. It had to be The Rock, The Crow. Then it went to Tombstone. And of course, there's got to be a Star Wars one in there. And then I got Tombstone. I think Open Range probably came in second, just for the last like 30 minutes. You know,
oh, that's like, you know, you could just watch the last 30. Open Range is just badass.
Oh, and the book was good. I actually I found the book. I never find the novelizations of these books, but that one came out good.
Well, speaking of books, man, you've been a cop, a fed, everything for like how many years now? 22, 25 years.
Yeah, I started, I call it starting in 2000. I did the reserve officer gig when I was in college, but I actually got sworn and went to the academy in 2000. At Charleston PD, it was awesome. That was a ride, like little foreign change there. And then, like most of us, too many movies, and we decide we got to be feds, right? We gotta follow that. We gotta get that special in front of our agent.
Mm-hmm. I am an FBI agent. Yeah. That's like the best thing ever, man.
Pretty much any TDY I went on, I ended up being Johnny Utah. No matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the FBI. Yeah. We'll save that conversation for another day. But Charleston, man, I dig Charleston. I went there for a few job school when I was with ICE. 3 weeks in beautiful Charleston, because they have a fleshy campus there as well. I love it, man.
Yeah, when I was a rookie there, the reason I asked you about Border Patrol earlier is they used to run Border Patrol Basic through that Fletsy campus, and we used to be able to use the gym. So I remember a very very young and experienced police officer getting yelled at because I almost walked across the Border Patrol seal when I was walking into the gym, and there was somebody right there to make sure I was on the straight and narrow. Like, you got it, sir. No problem. But I used to drill there before it expanded. We used to, the Coast Guard, we had a station there that we used to drill out of. That was after we moved from way downtown in Trad Street on the harbor. But
Charleston
place.
They still had a ton of Coast Guard up at Fletsy there. And for everybody who's not this nomenclature and stuff like that, it's a federal law enforcement training center, and they have campuses all over, one in Georgia, one there, New Mexico. We have one here near us. We use for the firing range, Cheltenham, all over the place. But yeah, man, like this writing bug, when did this hit you? This was like pre or post, like law enforcement?
Oh, it's long pre. I think I got addicted to it like in grade school. I just started outlining everything, but I can never put it together. Probably lack of intelligence and life experience. And then it actually set in when I finished grad school in 2012. I had like 2.5 hours every day I'd be spending researching and writing, and I'd be doing that before the workday started, and I get done and I'm like still waking up because you're in the zone and you're just like, well, what am I going to do with this? So I just set a goal of 500 words a day. And like 6 months later, I had a first draft of my first book, and I was like, that was fun. I'm going to do it again. So I just keep going.
Let's talk about that first book. Was your protagonist kind of an LEO type? I don't know much about your books. I still have to buy them. I'm so backed up on books right now, but tell us about your protagonist and how that developed.
So I've always been a huge fan of the crime thriller, like we were talking earlier, like Elmore Leonard, the old Wamba, the old school guys. But also, of course, like everybody else, I'm a fan of like the fantasy world. But what always bothered me was in the fantasy world, you know, the protagonist starts off as this weakling who's just not in the game. He's just not prepared for it. But like you get 3/4 through the book and suddenly his great, great, great grandfather was like a druid king master of something with a lightsaber stuck in his back. And I was like, nah, we're not going to do any of that. I'm going to put this detective who doesn't believe in anything he can't see, smell or hear, put him up against a triple murder case that he catches that happens to be a coven of like witches summoning demons and stuff like that. And he doesn't have any ancestry that says, I'm going to come save you at the 11th hour. He just has a gun and a pair of handcuffs and a bunch of other people around him who have no idea what's going on. And they just kind of figure it out as they go. So I didn't want to give anybody any advantages.
I think there's a great market for this right now. The fantasy, the crime thriller and the thriller. There's so much of the same protagonist when it comes to like just military thrillers that people are kind of like, we need to throw a little something in there. So I like this idea. I like this grasp of concept with that, man.
Yeah, I just didn't want to do it. I don't want to give somebody the name of like, you know, Cliff Jumper superhero, you know, extraordinary in the name.
A John Stamp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, give him that big strong name. So my guy is like from that first protagonist, Jackson Cole, just another detective. But yeah, he's got no advantages, doesn't believe in anything magic, anything like that. And I've kind of tried to keep that rolling throughout. So, you know, when I write a character, it's just like my guy in my new book, Tyrone Benhoff. That's one right out of the phone book. You're not going to see him on a movie screen or anything. But just like an amalgam and a wise ass of every character that I've run into in the last 20 years in law enforcement, like the bane of any manager's existence, you know, just throwing him, let's throw him out in the middle of Zimbabwe, where his backup's like 5 hours away and see how he handles it. I've always kind of kept that because I don't want to fall into that trap, you know.
There's so much going around right now. So many good books, man. What sets yours apart from anybody else? That's what I want to know. I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Oh boy, that's a tough one. I think with my horror books, mixing that procedural, mixing that crime procedural, and those kind of intangibles of the police culture in with, you know, witches and demons and you know, just straight sorcerers. I think that that kind of gives it that nice mix that you don't get anywhere. And there's something, and I will admit it's not great on my part, but there are parts of my books that if you weren't on the job at some point, you're not going to giggle at. But if you were, you're going to snicker a little bit. So I try to get that Wamba feel, that authenticity that Joseph Wamba brings into any given thing. Like in my new one, he's the reporting requirements are getting him to the point of being suspended. While he's in the middle of Zimbabwe trying to sort himself out between a group of ivory poachers and protective rain, you know, wildlife rangers. And he's not calling in because the cell phones aren't working in the entire country that day. But when he finally makes contact, the first thing they can do is threaten to write him up because he didn't file a report on time. Just mixing those kinds of things in, just trying to a little bit of that bureaucratic nonsense that we've had to deal with, you know.
He didn't get your time and attendance in. Oh my god.
Yeah, exactly. The web TA wasn't there. And yep. They needed to know what the license plate number on his G-Ride was, and he wasn't there to tell him.
He didn't record his mileage either. What's going on? You gotta pay the miles.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh my gosh. We know what crime scene in Lion Country, but I don't have my G-Ride's number right now.
Yeah, exactly. John, the cool thing about your concept, and that's one thing I really like about mixing the fantasy world and the horror world into a police procedural or in the thriller world, is it opens up another world. You know, when we talk military, I love military thrillers, don't get me wrong. But when we talk about, we're talking like almost like a two-dimensional world. I know Al-Qaeda. I know this. I know that. I know there's terrorism. I know this. I know that. But when you open up your world, you're opening up a new world. So it gives the reader like this whole new concept, like, wow, you know, that's actually kind of cool. And then having a protagonist who's not just sticking CONUS, he's going overseas, he's doing this, he's doing that. I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, and that's why I settled on the NCIS as being his agency, simply because you can go pretty much anywhere as long as you can creatively find a Navy nexus to something. You know, this first book takes place in Zimbabwe. My next one is sketched out. I'm about 15,000 into the first draft. Then this one's taking place in Jakarta, Indonesia. And it's a global presence. So I can, with that spectrum of caseload, I can, anything that comes into my mind, I can pretty much justify it and keep it relatively legit. But yeah, when you talk about the military thriller, like I have a draft of the third Jackson Cole novel, that horror procedural series, and I tried to do a true romance kind of thing between an elf or a fairy and a army ranger who got booted out on a medical. You know, it's trying to jam those two worlds together that should not align, or just I enjoy doing that, but it's kind of sitting on my shelf because I'm not sure I like it, you know, not sure if I could pull it off quite right.
Yeah, that kind of seems like one of those weird, like, romance novel type things.
Yeah, like I'm thinking, you know, romance novel. Yeah, when I say true romance, I'm thinking the Quentin Tarantino version.
So oh yeah,
be about as close as I get to a romance novel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's not my genre, so I don't know.
Okay, here's a quick question for you. Who played the hitman in True Romance?
Oh, it was Christopher Walken. Oh, no. Or are you talking the guy
Trish Arquette.
Yeah, she killed him with a wine opener. Michael Madsen, right? Wasn't that Michael Madsen?
James Gandolfini.
Oh.
Sopranos. Yeah. Madsen in that? He's usually in all of them.
I feel like him and Tarantino were pretty tight. He made his way into Kill Bill. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I know. Well, you know what? You know, True Romance was like, it was a Tarantino movie, but it doesn't really feel Tarantino-ish compared to the other ones. I don't think it got enough credit for what it was.
That movie is an absolute classic, but you can see him in the writing. He wrote it. I mean, I don't think he directed it. I think it was I can't think of his name, but he got the writing credit for it. But see it in all the dialogue and all that stuff. And you know and Christian Slater's him in his prime. Outside of Gleam in the Cube, I think that guy really shined Cube. In that movie.
I know. What was the one where he was the DJ?
Oh, Pump Up the Volume.
Oh yeah.
I was talking about that movie the other day. It just I was having a conversation with a niece of mine who was trying to go into that kind of world, and I was like, "All right, stop right here and go home and watch Pump Up the Volume. That's just start it out right there."
This episode brought to you by Big Tex Ordnance. Big Tex Ordnance has the absolute fastest shipping I've ever used when it comes to gun parts and gun accessories, optics, anything I need. The shipping is just, it's beyond reproach. Now listen, Big Tex Ordnance has top-of-the-line gear for your AR-15, for your Glock, and even now for your Walther. I just picked up a Walther PDP from them. I love it. One of the best guns I've shot. And their shipping for that, from the time I ordered to my FFL, was days. If they say they have it, they have it. If it's in stock, it means it's literally in stock on their shelves. They're not getting it from a third-party vendor. If you order it, it's almost possible to get it shipped that same day with no problems. Make sure you head over to BigTexOrdnance.com now. Use code PROTECTORS. Get a special discount. Again, BigTexOrdnance.com. Tony Scott directed True Romance.
Tony Scott. Yep, that guy's done. Yeah. Last Boy Scout, all of them.
Yeah, he was like back in the day, it was all had that same feeling about it.
Yep. Yeah, I still think he peaked at Man on Fire, though. When Tony Scott did Man on Fire, that was that was amazing.
Yeah. And anybody out there, whenever I talk about Man on Fire, I like to talk about the 1980s version with Scott Glenn and Joe Pesci.
That's I remember the bad you thing mentioned about me, that.
Man. Yep, I mentioned it a couple of times. I'm like, people, Man on Fire, Joe Pesci, and Scott Glenn are like, what? Yeah, yep, but anyway, nope. Man. So we're looking for Blood Red Eye. Well, the thing about books is we're looking for Blood Red Ivory. That's the latest book. Where do we find that? Can we buy that local or is it Amazon?
It's going to be mostly on Amazon, but my publisher, I just put this one out with a Wild Blue publishing and really big, good true crime library they've got, and their thrillers. They've really been expanding, but they've really got a good niche and they put a lot into it. They've been really supportive. Actually, my first audiobook is going to be of Blood Red Ivory coming out in May. I consider myself still like on my rookie contract as far as a writer goes. Like I just started doing it for fun and I'm still doing it for fun, but I'm gradually learning, you know, how the business works and what I'm looking for when I'm looking for people to partner with, stuff like that. So
Yeah. You know what, brother? I like to talk about marketing with anybody who's a new author coming on, especially like indie or small publishers. You have to, podcasts are where it's at. And I think you're doing the right thing. I'd love to see you go on a lot more podcasts because, you know, readers need to understand what they're getting into before they invest in a character. And I think you're really hitting the nail on the head with the protagonist and getting him out there in a world and really telling his story, man, about how you got into it. And that's one thing that, I mean, we kind of glossed over your background, but you have a hell of a background, man. A lot of different agencies, a lot of different experience. You and I have a lot of similarities, except I can't write worth a shit, except when here and there. If it's fiction, I can't write it. I'm trying to write it. But yeah, man, you're doing really good things. I like to see you get out and do some signings too.
I try to hit like 3 conferences a year, and it's funny you mentioned the podcast. I never really connected until getting ready for Blood Red Ivory. So I started reached out to you, a couple other ones, and I've been having so much fun doing it that like a month ago, I was telling my wife, I was like, I should just start doing my own. And she gave me that look like, I'm going to support you, but I'm not really sure what you're thinking. You know, don't embarrass me. Right. So I actually just kicked it off. I just kicked one off last week. It's going to be true crime, but I've had this thing that I do. A buddy of mine asked me to write an anthology for him, asked me to contribute to an anthology about a year and a half ago. And I couldn't do a 5,000 word short story to save my life. I just couldn't do it. I can put 80 to 100,000 words on page to wrap a story up, but apparently I'm so long winded, I just can't do it. So I started taking like dumb criminal stories, and I'd rewrite, if they were funny enough, I'd write my own scene as if, like, if I'm at the bar, like telling everybody this crazy stuff that happened during shift, this is my version of events. So it can either be close to this stupid human trick, or it's just completely my version of the war stories we're telling about four beers in, you know. So
that's awesome, man.
So I'm like, I'll just start talking about those instead of blogging about them. So we'll see.
What's
how it
your
goes
podcast? I'm trying to find the podcast now.
It's called the That's Criminal. And I just kicked off. I'm like, this is fun. Like, I enjoy this. I know there's a lot of people that kind of freak out about the idea of sitting down for an interview, but I don't know if it's because of the instructor background or as an 1811, you got to go talk to strangers every day. I just enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun to just reach out and talk to people, especially when we're talking movies and books and stuff like that. It's just great.
It's so weird when you get behind a mic. Like, in person, I sometimes stutter and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you get behind a mic. And that's why I always tell people, I'm like, if you're going to do a podcast, try it. Do three or four episodes. You don't like it? Meh. Delete it. You know? But just stick to it.
Yeah, and it's been fun. See, the family's been pretty supportive. Like I told them, like, I got a thing going on today at 5, so evacuate the house.
You know? Oh my gosh. I remember, believe me, that's the biggest thing, is trying to find somewhere quiet.
Yeah.
And dogs and podcasting.
My guy's old enough that if I like shut the door someplace, he's just like, all right, I'm gonna have to go to sleep. He's if the UPS guy shows up, you're gonna hear him. But otherwise, like, all right, you shut the door. I get to take a nap now.
Well, John, I'm starting a new thing with authors. It's gonna be the top five questions for authors, and I'm gonna give you five questions. And, you know, feel free to answer. You know, you're not under any Giglio or Calkins or, you know, declinations from U.S. attorneys here. But your favorite thriller author growing up, not in the past 20 years. We're talking when you were a teen, your favorite thriller author, could be fiction, nonfiction.
Yep. I these aren't timed, right? And
no.
I gotta shake it off. I gotta shake it off a little bit. You mentioned Giglio and Calkins. I'm like, okay, no.
Exactly.
I vacuumed up all of Tom Clancy when I was probably starting at about 11 years old with Patriot Games. And so that was just huge. And of course, those are 900 page books each. So, you know, that ate up a lot of the childhood. But the first book I ever read that I would consider in the adult format was Peter Benchley's Jaws.
Huh.
And that was probably around 8 years old. And I'd seen the movie. And then reading the book, I was like, that was one of the first ones I was like, I want to do that. But actually, I think one of the first ones that made me want to get into the writing gig was probably seeing Tom Clancy wearing a flight suit and like a Top Gun jacket on the back of his cover.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, oh, that's what they get to do. I get to go do that. I'm gonna be a writer.
Exactly. Yeah. So Clancy, we got that. What's your favorite action movie? And, you know, with you, I'm going to go with 80s or 90s action movie.
The best thing, and I'll tell you the funniest framing to this question is Amazon lately has been like the last bastion of funny movies, because it has been unabashedly unwilling to censor or clean up all those 80s comedies like Beverly Hills Cop, 48 Hours. And so the one that I've landed on that I've watched probably three times, and I could not tell you why, is Running Scared with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
What a great movie.
I know. You would never expect it. Like, what's a tap dancer and a guy from Saturday Night Live doing fighting it out in Chicago? But it's a fantastic
Gregory
movie.
Gregory Hines, man. And, you know,
funny.
Billy Crystal's incredible, man. But it was like those two in an action movie. And I remember Uzi's, you texted Uzi's me that, everywhere. And I was like, yep, you texted me that movie, and I went to go rent it. And I was like, damn, I forgot. We have got to do that movie one of these weeks. Running Scared is such an underrated movie. Jimmy Smits was the bad guy in that one.
Yep. Yeah.
I think he was running down the road in his whitey tighties or something like that. What a good
snow
movie.
Snow everywhere. Uh-huh. But they played it right by the numbers with the, the pissed off captain yelling at him every time they walk in the door. Mm-hmm. The young guns that were two like 80s action heroes in their own right that I could not remember to save my life.
Well, I'm going to look this up while you're figuring out the biggest influence you've had. And you know what? I'm going to say your biggest influence in your law enforcement career, not writing. I want to know your law enforcement career.
That's a good one. Biggest influence in the law enforcement career. I would have to say the biggest advantage I had going into law enforcement was that I got dropped into a squad. And I Charleston, so James Island, Johns Island. Back in the day, that was its own patrol team. And I got dropped into a squad with proactive, but very level-headed and logical officers all around me. Like my FTO was his first orders to me. I started on midnight shift, and he said, "If at any point all night long you're driving and I ask you where we are, if you don't know the answer, you're doing push-ups." It's like, awesome. That's a good start. And then my sergeant. My sergeant had this thick Puerto Rican accent, giant man with a handlebar mustache, completely bald. One of his first best pieces of advice. He said, very first couple days in, wanted to sit me down, and he said, "Don't ever think that badge is going to save you." He's like, "There are people that will take that badge from you as a point of pride." So because you have a gun and a badge, you are already seen as the biggest fish walking into any room. But there's always going to be somebody else there that's going to take it from you. And don't think that you can hide behind it. It's not big enough. Which leads you into that realm of watching these guys and watching them talk to people, watching them read that body language that a rookie, you have no idea what you're doing. You're just hoping to hold on tight and make it through your FTO. But watching how these people can talk to people and actually take a really insane situation and end up having everybody smile at the end of it was a really giant influence on how to actually be in the law enforcement. It's all talking to people. Like a buddy of mine says, we talk to people, write stuff down, and collect stuff. That's what we do. And just watching them make that work in some high stress situations that just shows you what you're supposed to be,
That's excellent advice, man. Excellent advice. Mm-hmm. Now, who would be the leading actor in Blood Red Ivory to be the protagonist?
Oh, who I always I liked for I think for the sarcastic part of it, I don't know if the hair would match, but Walter Goggins from The Shield. Mm-hmm. I think his it might be a little too southern for him because Ty's actually from upstate New York, but not a huge guy. Definitely wouldn't be The Rock hanging out here tearing it up. But I think somebody like a Taylor Kirsch would probably play it right. He can do the sarcastic side and the slapstick side a little bit. So when I think of Ty, I'd probably go that route.
And
I'm open. I'm open for options. Anybody listen, feel free to option my stuff. I don't know what that means, but I've heard people say it.
Sounds good. It has something to do with money. Now check this out. You know who played the two young guys? Was Stephen Bauer. He played Tony Montana's best friend in Scarface. And John Grise. He played Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite.
another classic role that man had was being the werewolf in a Monster Squad.
Oh yeah.
You want to go deep? You want a deep movie reference? That's about as deep as I get.
And real genius too.
Oh, real genius classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Living in the walls.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Here's your last question. This is a tough one. Oh, boy. You're in a field. You're on a hilltop. You have 100 yards around you. Zombies are coming. They're all over. There's 100 zombies and they're only after sound. You can stand on top of this little hill forever, but they're after sound. Got to understand you don't have any water. You don't have any food. You could have an M4, but a suppressor in 90 rounds and no optics. You can have a shotgun with unlimited rounds, Or you could have a Ruger 10/22 with 10,000 rounds and optics. And the only thing that kills them is, no, there's 100 zombies. So the M4, you get 90 rounds, shotgun unlimited, 10/22. You have optics, but you get 1,000 rounds. And only thing that stops the zombies is headshots.
Yep. And I've actually thought of this one before when you've said it. I was like, oh, I kind of went back and forth on all of them. First of all, I would like a caveat that ever since reading the World War Z, I would also request the entrenching tool that the Marines were so fond of as a zombie killing device. But thinking about it, I would have to go with a Mossberg Mariner pump action shotgun. Mm-hmm. Okay. And all I'm going to do is aim for the hips and the knees. And and kind of bowl them over. And then run.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't care who they're crawling after next. But if I got enough distance, I can. If I can drop a few of them, I can just start making piles and keep going. There's only 100 of them, right?
Yeah, as long as they're not the World War Z type zombies that are like hauling ass.
Yeah, I was thinking if, as long as they're not 28 days later,
man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the 28 days later, guys.
Gosh, there was a show that came out not that long ago where it's like in the winter. And like as soon as the people turn into zombies, they're like just hauling ass after you. It was on Netflix, like Z. Not World War Z, Z or something like that.
There was also a really awful one on Sci-Fi that I think I might have made it halfway through, but it was supposed to be a comedy. And that was, I'm going to have to check out the Netflix one. I'm a sucker for a zombie movie.
Yeah, me too. I love zombies.
Yep. I don't want to say I cheated, but I've heard you ask that on different episodes. I'm like, I'm changing it around a little bit.
Like usually I'm with the M4. I give them optics. So now I'm going to go with the M4 with optics, with no optics. I mean, just straight iron sights. And then a 10/22, I'll give them optics. And with a shotgun, just unlimited.
And were we talking slugs or are we talking buckshot? I should have asked that question.
Yeah, buckshot. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. Yeah.
Because you're going to have to get close to get some good hip shots with that.
Yeah, you're not taking out that much structure from like 15, 20 yards. You're going to have to, we're going to have to start real close. I don't think I can do that unless I got slugs. So,
I should really go down to like say, okay, you have like a five shot Remington 870 or something like that.
That's a lot of reloading. That's a
whole
lot.
I think your arms would be tired after that one.
Yeah, I think that'd be a rough one. So I might have to go. I'm not that great a shot, so I might have to go 10/22.
Yeah, I love my 10/22, man. My first one I had was a Marlin 10/22. Then I got a Ruger 10/22. Put a 50 round mag on that thing, and boom, you're good to go.
Yep, I had one of those when I was a kid, and we just used to go blasting all through the woods. Who knows where those things landed?
I know exactly. Well, John, I appreciate you coming on, man. And the book is Blood Red Ivory, and it is out now. Is it out now?
Yep. Yeah, it came out in January, January 18th. And the audiobook I'm really excited about because it's the first one, May 3rd. So I'm pretty psyched about that. That's a new step. So
great, man. Well, we're going to be following you. We're going to have you back on for the protagonist show and do some author roundtables and whatever else, man.
Sounds great.
Welcome to the Protectors family.
I like it, man. I love the show. So I love both shows. So I appreciate the time.
Now we got another new show coming next week with Rick Hogg and Mark Kelly called Romeo Charlie Reality Check. So we'll do a live show Monday, but it's going to be more along the lines of, you know, real protector stuff, like, you know, geared towards civilian law enforcement, military, and everybody. Like next week, our first episode is going to be about home defense, you know, follow home. Break-ins, you know, securing your house, what to do. And we're not going to be selling fear. We're just going to be selling, hey, you know what? Reality is you can have a gun in your nightstand, but you still have to worry about safety for your kids not getting in. You got to train your family, stuff like that. It should be a fun show. So everybody check that one out as well. And everybody, please buy Blood Red Ivory. I will be buying a copy myself. It's got to go on the Protector's bookshelf here.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. That new one, it's everybody likes to have a gun around, but if you don't know how to use it, you might not be doing anybody any good. The training is a big piece that people don't like. They just like the pretty little guns.
That's why I became a firearms instructor, because I want to be able to teach.
Yeah,